All right, our next afternoon session is the legal side of labor, examining the risks and implementing solutions for ag employers. David Briggs is a partner with Saffield Griggs Law Firm. David advises management with regard to difficult employee relations issues and assists with employers with employment law compliance and the development of personnel manuals, employment agreements, and best practices. He also assists in the defense of employers against claims by current and former employees, as well as in the enforcement of non-competition and non-solicitation agreements. Whew, a lot of words there. All right, please join me in welcoming David.
Hey, thanks for having me. I noticed a bunch of you leaving the room just as I got up here. I'm going to assume it's not because I'm a lawyer, maybe. So I want this to be an open session, so if you guys have questions, feel free to ask as you go. Not often you get to get free legal advice, so feel free to go. I did want to talk about what we're going to talk about, but first, before we move on, Jenny was talking a lot about sick time, and so I wanted to mention sick time for you guys a couple things. She mentioned it for you guys. Boley said, we're not going to enforce this thing for a whole year. We're going to focus on compliance, and they had a lot of seminars. They had Chet Nakata out doing dozens and dozens of seminars for people, and now they said, now we've trained you all. Now the penalties are coming. So come January 1 this year, there's going to be a switch in Boley from compliance to enforcement, and so if you guys haven't gotten into compliance, do it now before January 1. I would also say that there's a few things that you should be doing, because I want to focus on some practical steps for you guys and actually running your farms. First is you should have a policy in place on sick time. Your sick time can be different for your seasonal workers who can be accruing at the 1 hour for every 30 hours worked, right? You can do something different for your full-time employees. I'm gonna give them a lump sum. I'm gonna do my part-time, year-round part-time employees at something completely different. So I can have three different systems in place for different categories of employees and there's no problem with it. The other thing that you should be doing is making sure that you have the policy in place that says that your leave will accrue for the first 90 days, but you are not allowed to use it because you're not allowed to rely on that provision there. So the statute says you're allowed to do that if you have it in writing and given to your employees. So they don't get to use it for your first 90 days. So for those, I mean, you have seasonal employees coming in, you want to make sure that they're not allowed to get there and then start using their sick time. Make sure that you've got that policy in place. Okay. Other questions on sick time before I move on to the rest of the talk? All right, good. All right, so we'll talk a little bit about litigation risk. We'll talk about terminating employees. We'll talk about documentation, because I'm sure you guys have nothing better to do than document things. Talk about severance agreements, and then a little bit about farm labor contractors, because we're seeing a lot more risks come up with them. So just a quick point. You have lots of problem employees. You know, I really like the guy that's piled the hay here. I mean, that's the kind of efficiency that I want at my farm, right? So first off, we talk about who can sue you. Who can sue you? It's somebody that's protected class or status. A class is who you are, just based on your birth or kind of, it can be age, race, gender, religion. I've got a whole bunch of things here. And then protected activity. I'm now protected because of what I've done. Now you're sitting there saying, I get a lot of questions about at-will. Aren't we an at-will state? I say, yeah, we are. You can fire anybody you want, anytime, for any reason, so long as it's not a protected reason. So we are at will, but there's reasons that we say we're not allowed to fire people. And of course, you may be firing somebody for legitimate reasons, but what are they gonna say? So we see this a lot. Poor performer, one of my, there's some examples later about some actual cases on this too. Two biggest kinds of claims that come in nowadays, retaliation, a lot for workers' comp. Retaliation, filed a workers' comp claim, or I was prevented from filing a workers' comp claim and I got fired, demoted. My wages were decreased, or I even got put into a different field. I'm a piece rate worker, and I got put into a different field that was less productive for me. So retaliation is the first kind of claim we see. The next one, sexual harassment. There's been an explosion of sexual harassment claims for farms over the course of the last about 3 or 4 years. The reason? How many of you had women, a lot of women, working on your farms 10 years ago? How many of you have a lot of women working there now? There's been a big shift in farms to see a lot more women in the workforce. A lot more women in the workforce means a lot more sexual harassment claims, okay? So, what is sexual harassment? when you if you guys get a complaint about sexual harassment coming in, first thing that I want you to do, don't say harassment. Don't say hostile work environment. These are claims that are made all the time. People use these words because they're just part of culture nowadays. They're very legally charged. What harassment means for most people isn't what we mean as lawyers. Hostile work environment, the same thing. So harassment is one of two things. It's quid pro quo, of course. I'm a lawyer, I like Latin. So it means something for something. It's kind of the 1960s version of harassment, right? So the supervisor says, hey, if you go on a date with me, I'll make sure that you get a raise. Or if you don't go out on a date with me, I'm gonna make sure you get fired, right? I'm gonna give you something if you give me something. The other kind is hostile work environment. Hostile work environment means that something is so severe or pervasive, so it's so bad or frequent, that it's altered the terms and conditions of employment. So what does that really mean? Generally, touching somebody, that's a severe thing, especially depending on where you touch them, as we'll talk about with some of the examples, is a big deal. Having a Sports Illustrated swimsuit calendar on your wall, very frequent, but not so severe, and so probably doesn't alter the terms and conditions of the workplace. So it depends on what's going on in their very fact-intensive kind of cases. The issue for you guys is, do you want to be going in front of 12 of your peers and admitting to whatever conduct was going on, whether it was jokes, we see a lot of jokes, whether it was touching, whether it was something else that was going on. All right, so we'll talk about, these are all cases that we've handled, all right? We've changed the names to protect the innocent or the less than innocent in some cases. But I want to get your thoughts on whether you think that there's a claim here by the employee. Tom, a welder, has been on leave related to workplace shoulder injury. Shortly after returning, Tom accidentally starts a fire next to the shop. In panic, he races to get a power washer to try to douse the flames before cooler and wiser heads step in. You fire Tom for poor judgment. Okay, so Tom's about to put out an oil fire with a whole lot of water. Good idea or bad idea? Really bad idea, right? Not only a lot of water, but a power washer, right? Did I mention Tom, in real life, Tom was actually a volunteer firefighter as well. So the client comes to me and they say, yeah, I want to fire him. Can I fire him? I say, absolutely. They say, are we getting sued? I said, yes, you are. And why? Because he had just filed a claim for a shoulder injury. And actually, he filed the claim for the shoulder injury right about, he actually complained about all the hoses in the shop about a week prior to that, saying, hey, these are a trip hazard, everybody. And then a week later, what does he do? He trips over the trip hazard he was complaining about. Is this a guy you want to keep? No. So he gets fired and he sues. But their other choice was to wait for this guy to actually go out and kill somebody because he was an idiot. And actually, the other thing that wasn't in here is a couple weeks before that first complaint, he got into an accident with the forklift and caused $10,000 of damage to the forklift and nearly killed himself. So all sorts of problems with Tom, but because of the timing of the situation, and this is really important for you guys, timing is critical. If an employee can say that my termination is linked to something protected, that especially that came up recently, they can sue you, and they very well might. There's a lot of offices out there that are focusing now on farm labor in general, whether it's the Oregon Law Center, whether there's Northwest Workers Justice Project or Boley or other private firms. They're focusing on farm labor because they know that you guys are a rich target to hit. All right. Ben, a Caucasian supervisor, makes inappropriate jokes with Hispanic subordinates. Some of the employees jokingly call Ben gringo and white devil. Ben makes jokes in return. For example, one day when Ben notices his shop is messy, he tells Ramon, clean this place up. It's starting to look like Mexico. Ramon quits. Now, is this the kind of stuff that goes on all day, every day at farms? Well, maybe not every farm. Maybe not yours. Maybe. Do you know whether it's happening or not? Have your managers been trained? Is it okay for them to say those kinds of things? You think Ramon has a claim here? See a lot of people saying no, shaking their heads no. Well, in this case, Ramon actually sued. And because of the constant kind of joking atmosphere, there was a little bit of traction there, and the plaintiff's attorneys didn't want to let it go. Case settled, as most do. But it was still enough for the plaintiff's attorneys to really think that there was something here, there was something more meaty here. Okay. Joe, let's go to the next one. Joe drives part-time for his job. He has several seizures at work, and an MD suspends his driving privileges. You fired Joe for not being able to drive. Joe have a claim? He's got to drive for his job, right? Why can't I fire him? You say, now the lawyer's going to tell me I can't fire Joe, right? This case, actually okay. Assuming that driving is what we would call an essential function of the job, how do you prove that? Having a job description is a good start. So you guys should have job descriptions. If you need help on how to write job descriptions, you can email me. My email address is on the last page here. And I've got a bunch of copies of this presentation as well. If anybody wants one, I'm happy to hand this out. So Joe, if you've got your job description, you fire Joe for it for this, you're probably in the clear. Shouldn't be able to sue. All right. Rick asks a subordinate out on a date and asks her to send him revealing pictures of himself. She sends the pictures. Employee's still working at the farm. Can she sue you? She's still working. Nothing bad's happened to her, right? Supervisor, what's the supervisor going to say here? It's consensual. She didn't have to send me the pictures. What's she going to say? I had to send him the pictures. I would have gotten fired, right? So, note on supervisors. They are part of the company. When I say part of the company, I mean part of the liability for the company. What they do, you do. What they know, you know, whether you know it or not. So your supervisors and managers need to be trained. You need to talk to them about the kind of liability that they're exposing you guys to, and what happens if they do something wrong. What happens if a claim for harassment or retaliation comes to them? They should be reporting that to you guys so that you guys can take care of it, because of the huge amount of liability that falls on their shoulders. There's so many cases where I get farmers that are saying, hey, I had the supervisor who was taking care of it. I didn't even know about it. Why am I being subjected to liability? Why can they even sue me? I didn't even know what he was doing. And the law says, we don't care whether you knew what he was doing or not. That he was doing it, you gave him that authority. Okay. All right. Let's talk a little bit about terminating employees. So why do people end up suing? Most of the time they end up suing because of surprise. I was a little surprised that I was terminated. You're not treating me fairly, right? I didn't think that you should be doing this. And so the best protection that I can give for you guys is when you fire somebody, make sure that they know it's coming. When you fire them, you should also be documenting it. I've got a lot of cases where you fire a guy that's been with you for a month, a seasonal guy that's been with you for a month or less, and a year later when they end up suing you, we come to you and say, hey, who fired this guy? I don't even remember who pulled the trigger on him. I have no idea. Could have been me, it could have been that. I don't even remember the guy. If I don't have a picture of him, I don't think I could pick him out of a lineup. So having good documentation here is going to be key. Other big reasons that people sue, they don't feel like they have an outlet to complain to, especially when you've got a language barrier. If I feel like the person that I need to go talk to is my supervisor, but I feel like he's the one that's either the problem or there's just nothing happening. If there's a language barrier between that individual and you, that's going to create a problem. So I know some farms have actually contracted with interpreting services, and they put that sign on the wall. Hey, if you want to come talk to me, you can. If you don't feel comfortable talking with the supervisor, we're going to get some third party in here that's going to do the interpreting for us. Or bring a family member. Whatever works for you guys. Okay. And then finally, if the employee thinks that you have bad motives, not often the case, but there's times where they think that you guys have done something wrong. All right. Why does a plaintiff's attorney take the case? Really, at the end of the day, because they think they can make some money. When you get into nonprofits like the Northwest Workers Justice Project or the Oregon Law Center, they also feel like they're trying to right wrongs, that these employees are being ground under the big bad boot of the farmers, and so that they're rescuing them. They're wearing the white hats. Okay. So some of this is principle for some of these attorneys, but for the most part, it's because they think they can make money. How do we prevent that? Number one, documentation. So we make sure the documentation's in line. Who's the documentation for, by the way? Anybody want to guess? Who's it for? Is it for you guys? Somebody, yeah? Is it for the employee? A little bit. You put something in writing in front of them and put it under their nose, they know something serious is going on, right? But who's the documentation really for? I'll give you a hint. Right, it's for the lawyers because, and why do we want it documented? How many of you guys have been to Wikipedia before? Right, I go to Wikipedia, right? Who writes for it? Experts? Everybody. Anybody can write for Wikipedia, but we still go there, we still look things up, and we still believe what's in there. Why? Because somebody took the time to write it down. It's as simple as that, and I'm not kidding. As simple as that, people believe what's written down, especially when it's written down right around the time that it happened. So, write things down. And I'm going to actually try to make things a little easier for you guys. I know that especially during harvest, you don't have time to do this. But you can do it after the fact, especially as you're getting close to termination. You say, I have an example in here. Hey, in the last 3 months, Becky, you've had 3 verbal warnings about the same issue. Last chance. Especially if you put this in a written warning to this employee, you say, hey, here's your written warning, Becky. This is the 4th time we've had to talk about this issue in the last 3 months. And she signs that piece of paper, what am I going to say that is? Legal terminology. Admission, right? Becky signs that piece of paper, we're going to say it's an admission. Okay, supervisors out in the field, how are they going to do documentation? Most of them aren't carrying the clipboard or anything else. You know, the one thing they are carrying, though, everybody has it. Phone. Email somebody, right? All you have to do, set up an inbox where they can email. Hey, I talked to Ramon about this. He said, okay, I'm not going to do it again. Or even easier, almost everybody has that voice recording system on their phone, either through text or a separate program or whatever. They can just record something and then email it or text it or send it somewhere. It's there, though, right? That's just as good as writing it down and even faster. So I don't care how they document it. I don't care if it's written down in handwriting. I don't care if it's an email. I don't care. Whatever they want to do, do it. If they're doing handwriting, just make sure it's dated. All right, when I fire somebody, I still have Trump in here, but what should you say? You're fired? Should I say why? Some people just say it's a layoff. I'm firing you for cause. You're a terrible employee, but I'm going to just term it as a layoff because it's easier for me. It's not as confrontational. Usually I say, you got to tell them they're fired, and then you tell them why. In part, it's good so that they can't fill in the motives for you. Some employers don't want to put in anything else. They say, hey, we're an at-will state. I fired you for cause, but I'm just going to say you're fired. It's not working out. Get out of here. I'd rather tell them why. And so we set up a good story because it's the truth all the way through. I told you before you were fired, if you do this again, you're going to be fired. I told you at the termination meeting you're fired for the same reason. I'm going to say the same thing at the unemployment hearing. I'm going to say the same thing if you get bully or an attorney coming after me. Same consistent story all the way through. Because if you say it's something it wasn't, let's say it's a layoff, what are plaintiff's attorneys going to do? Hey, so you said that it was a layoff, right? Yeah, I did. When you said that, you were lying, weren't you? Yes, I was. So you're a liar, aren't you? Well, no, I'm not a liar. Well, you lied, didn't you? Yes, I did. So you're a liar. Well, I guess I am. Yeah, I was lying. So attorneys are good at twisting what you do for their own ends. Sorry, it's what we do. When you run into problems, and I'm almost out of time, when you run into some problems, there's times where we do severance agreements. When you have somebody that's problematic, where you know that they're going to be suing, they've been talking about getting a lawyer, doing something else, you have all sorts of other performance problems with the employee, think about a severance agreement. Doesn't cost a lot of money for most employees. The actual agreement itself can be a few $100. It doesn't need to be a lot of money to even get the agreement. But then how much do I give them? Is the question I get next. And the rule of thumb is 1 week for every year worked. Okay? Been with you for less than a year, you may be able to get away with just a week or two of pay. Give them a week or two of pay, they'll sign a severance agreement and be gone. How you present it can be important, though. What we say is, we call it the door speech. There's two doors, door number one, door number two. Door number one, you're gonna stay here, and if you continue to work here, you're going to be under this performance improvement plan. And under this performance improvement plan, if you ever screw up again in any little way, I'm going to fire you. So, door number one, pain and suffering. Door number two, cash and prizes. Right? You want to leave right now, I'm going to give you a severance agreement. I understand it's Christmas time, it's whatever, you have kids. Make up some sympathetic reason why you want to give them money. I'm a caring person. Okay, I'm not really that caring. I'm just looking out for my own butt, right? So I'm going to give you a little bit of money if you want to walk away right now. You walk away right now, you get the money. You decide to stay, you're not going to get it if I have to fire you. It's a one-time deal. Door number one and door number two. If you're going to do it, get the release done and ready for them so that they can sign it right then and there if they want to do it. Okay. All right. Couple quick issues in some wage and hour law. Final paychecks, make sure you're getting those done timely. For the most part, you should be paying them as they walk out the door. There's a lot more nuance to when final paychecks are due, especially if you're terminating somebody. You should be able to hand them a paycheck on the way out the door. You're in charge of when you're firing somebody. So that may mean that in the moment when I really want to fire him because I saw him drinking beers in the back of my pickup truck on the job, and I want to fire him right there, I'm going to say, come back to the office, we need to talk, so that I can go get their final paycheck ready and then fire them, right? All right. Are you a manufacturer? And for most of you guys, you're going to say, no, I'm not a manufacturer. But if you are, you remember you have to deal with overtime rules. You see people that get into a manufacturing kind of business just because of the kind of processing they're doing. If you have a question about that, I'm happy to stick around at the end. And have you destroyed the ag exemption? So have you done work for another farmer? Has this employee done work for another farmer? Have I sent them to another farmer's field to do work? Are we trading labor? If you are, you've destroyed the ag exemption. They're now entitled to overtime. Are you processing crops for another farm? If you have, you've destroyed the ag exemption for overtime for that week. All right. And a farm stand could also destroy the ag exemption if the employee is working at the farm stand. All right. So, and by the way, statute of limitation on wage and hour claim can be 6 years for overtime, can be 2 and up to 3 years in certain cases. So with my last couple minutes, talk a little bit about farm labor contractors. How many of you guys are using farm labor contractors? Quite a few? All right. The reason why we started using farm labor contractors is a lot different than why we use them now. We started using farm labor contractors because of liability issues. I don't want to deal with the liability. My employees can sue me. I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want to deal with payroll. I don't want to have to deal with any. I'm going to give it to you. You go do that. That's changed now. The liability, and we heard that from Jenny, too. Joint employment relationships have greatly expanded, which means our liability has expanded. So for sexual harassment, retaliation, wage and hour, all those things you guys can be liable for. Think about that. I hired a farm labor contractor to do all this stuff for me, and I can still get sued for everything, including failure to pay wages. This worker doesn't get paid their wages, even though I'm paying this contractor every week, and I can still get sued for it. Is that fair? Not from our perspective, but from the worker's perspective, hey, I did the work, I just want to get paid. And so that's why the legislature set that up. All right, so how do you protect yourself? Number one, have a good contract that includes a good indemnification provision in there. You know, the indemnity that says, hey, if I get sued, you are going to defend me. Not only are you going to defend me, but you're paying for the cost of that defense. If it was your fault, it's on you. How much is that indemnity worth? Only as much as that contractor is worth. So oftentimes you want to get a personal guarantee on it as well if there's a business there. So, but it's only worth as much as that contractor or the guarantor is worth. So you may want to get a bond. Okay? You can require the contractor to get a bond. You can also require them to get insurance. You can get insurance for almost everything except for wage and hour claims. There is insurance out there. It's really expensive. But you can for all the harassment, retaliation, discrimination kind of claims, wrongful discharge, all that can be covered. So you're going to require the contractor to get that insurance. You may even, depending on how much work you're doing with them, you may want to be named as an additionally named insured. So another thing for you guys to know about, I've been working with a few farms recently and talking to Boley. One of the things that Boley has said as we're talking about it is for farms that have multiple entities set up. So for those of you, especially those with multiple crops, you may have a different entity for each crop. It's because your CPA or your lawyer told you that was a good idea, and it probably is for a lot of reasons. But what happens for most of them is they say, okay, I'm going to have one entity that's actually going to run the payroll for everybody, and then I'm going to be leasing out my workers to all the other different entities, right? And so you lease out all these workers to the entities, and talking to Boley, they said, you know what, in this case, even though you're not making any money really, you are a farm labor contractor. You are required to do all the things that farm labor contractors are required to do. You face all the liabilities that a farm labor contractor has to face. And you may also need to be paying fees for licensing. Should be paying fees for licensing. So Boley's take on it right now is, and Jenny and I are actually, Jenny Dressler and I are working a little bit on trying to find a fix for this going forward. But as it stands right now, if you're leasing, if you have multiple entities and one of those entities is leasing out farm workers to another entity, you're supposed to be a farm labor contractor. So, y'all look shell-shocked, a little tired. Any other questions for me before you get out the pitchforks and torches? All right, I think my time's up, and I'll stick around for as long as people want to have questions. I'll just be outside the door there. Thanks, guys, very much.